Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulips in Tuscany podcast. We're your hosts, Steffi,
Paige,
and Sarah.
And we're on a mission to share your stories and provide some awesome resources for families touring Holland.
We are three moms to some pretty incredible kiddos, and we're excited that you're here to navigate this unexpected journey with us through beautiful Holland.
Hey, Tulips Nation, welcome back to our podcast. I can't believe we're already on episode 7. Thank you so much to those of you who have been listening from day one, and to those of you who are just tuning in for the first time. You picked a great episode because today we're talking with our guest, Katie Kowaleski, who is a certified growth mindset life coach and Site K facilitator. We'll introduce our guest in just a moment, but first, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
I don't know about you guys, but Joshua is a pretty picky eater. He has quite a few sensory issues with certain foods, which makes it sometimes difficult to get him all the fiber he needs to maintain a healthy gut. Lately, we've been trying out High Fiber for Kids, which is a clear liquid fiber that can easily be added to your kid's favorite drink. Joshua doesn't even notice it's in there. We love it because it has 6 grams of fiber in 1 liquid tablespoon. There's no mixing required like your other typical bulking fibers, and it has a FOS prebiotic to help feed the healthy bacteria that are already in the gut, which ultimately promotes more regular bowels. The best part is that it's not a laxative or a stimulant, so your child will never become dependent on it. So I highly recommend you try out High Fiber for Kids. They're available on Amazon, and you can check them out by visiting the link in our podcast notes.
Okay, guys, I'd like to welcome our guest, my friend Katie, to the podcast.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
We're excited to have you.
Katie, we're so glad you agreed to hop on and chat with us. When we were talking about your experiences and what you do, I just immediately knew this was the perfect space for you to join us.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And I love talking about all these topics because they're all the things that I do. And they're my favorite things. So I'm happy to answer any questions and dive into what you guys think will be helpful for people to learn.
We're going to get started by asking one question that seems so common amongst mothers with special needs children. And that's, how often should we be implementing self-care? And I guess what does that even look like, or what does self-care entail?
Sure. So self-care is kind of a buzzword of late, right? So everybody has kind of a definition of self-care. And I find that when I ask clients about self-care, everyone tells me something different. And so when I work with people, we really focus on sort of the science behind the self-care process. And basically, self-care at its core is about engaging in intentional activities to calm the nervous system. So when we are in chronic states of anxiety, stress, etc., our bodies are actually in a mode of fight or flight. And when that happens, we lose blood flow to the executive functioning part of our brain, which is responsible for forming new thoughts, habits, beliefs, perceptions, and actions. And so when that happens, again, it's really easy to get stuck in stress cycles because we literally don't have the blood flow to our brain to be able to see things in a new way or create new options. So when I work with self-care with clients, we focus on picking fundamental and intentional activities that are going to calm the nervous system so we can get blood flow back to your brain. So for all the mamas out there, that's why things like getting your nails done, hair done, et cetera, are great. A lot of people define self-care to be in that realm. For our purposes, again, if you are feeling stressed or stuck or anxious, focusing on activities that are really going to increase blood flow is going to be your best bet. And so I always have people take at least 10 to 15 minutes a day to practice things like breath work, meditation, yin yoga, tai chi, any kind of mindfulness-based activity, grounding and earthing, so getting your feet on the bare earth outside. But things like that, acupuncture, chiropractic work, also are great for the nervous system. But it's 10 to 15 minutes of nervous system care. Is really going to help reset the system. And I invite people to start looking at caring for your nervous system the way that you would like brushing your teeth. Our nervous systems and whether or not they're balanced are going to dictate what kind of experience we have in our lives and how we're able to handle anything stressful that comes up. So it's really important to just get in the habit of understanding that the nervous system needs care, and experimenting with those different tools and tactics so you can figure out what works best for you.
Okay, wow. I love all of that.
Me too.
Good. I just started Joshua in chiropractic care. And of course, mom doing something for kids and not myself, but things like that tend to get expensive. So my question for you is there a resource or somewhere where you could find those different, the yogas that you were talking about or the breathing strategies where we can find that and implement that like at home?
Yes. Unless you are married to a chiropractor or one yourself, you're obviously going to want to head into a facility. For people that live in Orlando, Integrate Wellness Center is an incredible chiropractic center, and they do something called network spinal chiropractic, and it's non-invasive, very gentle, doesn't involve cracking, and they work on a sliding scale. So if you are on a budget and you are interested in this, check them out in Orlando. For the people that are at home, yes, there's plenty of resources. So for meditation, the app Insight Timer is one of my favorites. And then there's a plethora, especially now, post-pandemic, or what is it? End of pandemic? What is it?
Who knows? While we're
pandemic. Sure. Different for everyone.
While we're pandemicking, there are so many great options of at home, yoga and those kinds of things. And so I would honestly, I go on YouTube, and one of my favorite studios is called Be Sunlight Yoga, and it's in Orlando, and they have a bunch of free classes that are on YouTube, and they're great. You essentially can Google yin yoga, and whatever comes up, you're probably going to have a great class because it's all reclined, it's all laying down. So the teacher, you know, it's kind of a hard one to mess up, so to speak. So Google yin yoga. Again, Insight Timer is a great app for meditations. Walking around in your backyard barefoot with your kids for at least 10 minutes, another way to do that, laying in the grass, things like that also help balance the nervous system. And then another big one you can do at home is salt. So Epsom salt baths are really great for calming the nervous system. And so taking a bath and setting aside a little bit of time, perhaps after your kids go to bed, to be able to do that, or while they're at school. So those are some tools and tips for being able to do it at home that are affordable and easy.
I've been using Insight Timer since Katie did a class locally. Oh gosh, Tristan was like 6 months old. So almost 4 years ago, she did this class, and Insight Timer, I don't use it all the time, but it's still on my phone, and I do use it pretty frequently, I'd say. It hasn't offloaded off my phone, so I do use it. but it's a really great one. I like the really relaxing ones, and I've fallen asleep doing the like yoga nidra, those type of like breathing. You just literally just lay down and relax. And I feel like a lot of times as moms, and especially of moms of kids with special needs, we're on so much that when you're able to force yourself to stop and slow down, and you schedule it in your, put it in your schedule, like I will wake up early and do this, which is not my favorite, but, or I'll do this like before I go to bed, I'm going to stay awake and just do like 10 minutes of something. It's so much more effective than just saying, oh, I'm going to do this at some point today. I think giving yourself like a deadline, which is what I did 4 years ago when I started doing more self-care, and it's really helped, especially with Insight Timer.
It's so interesting to me to see, or like to hear, how different people have different ways of like implementing self-care. Like when you first started to say, get your nails done or get your hair done, I feel like those are kind of the things that I tend to gravitate towards as self-care. But as you're saying, like yoga and even just walking outside barefoot, I feel like those are more things that I need to do. So I don't know if nails and hair is exactly.
It's funny because taking a bath for me, I don't know why I started doing this like years ago after adulting, I started doing that because it was relaxing for me and I would just do it every evening. Yeah. And so now it's almost a habit for me. I just hop in the bath every single night, soak for like 10, 15 minutes and then hop out. And there's just something about like my whole body warming up and it just relaxes me for a little bit and then I'm good. And a lavender Epsom salt bath. Prime time. Ooh. Right before bed.
That does sound really nice. I feel like I need to switch it up a little bit, maybe less hair and nails and do something like a bath or yoga might do me some good.
And even for the postnatal moms or moms that just had a baby in that fourth trimester, I did the postnatal herbal bath mixes and with Epsom salts. And that was so, so good for healing and relaxing because And I can say that because I'm a new mom of two, I guess. new-ish. He's one, but it feels like yesterday.
New-ish. It's okay.
Yeah, those are really good too.
How much time would you say we should be taking out of our day to implement self-care?
All day long. No.
wouldn't that be nice?
Right? Honestly, 10 to 15 minutes. If that's you could it? Only start with, if well, you want to be consistent, right? And yeah. So it's nice if you have more time to play with it, or you're like, well, I'm going to build in 2 hours because if I build it in, I'll take it, then take it. Yeah. If you're on a time crunch and are just having trouble, or resistance to doing that, to feeling like you can be a priority and that that's okay, then start with 10 to 15 minutes. And even when you're in the bath, you can put on a meditation. So you can kind of double up. You can do breath work while you're in the bath. Essentially, you just want to try to find those activities for 10 to 15 minutes that soothe the nervous system. So being completely present and mindful for even that short amount of time will really help reset your nervous system. And that's the goal, right? Is to repair and reset the nervous system.
Okay. That's good to know.
Okay. So I have kind of a different question for you. So we've talked about this on some of our previous episodes, just how raising a child with special needs can often affect our marriages. And I think too, being able to implement self-care also can affect our marriage. And so I'm curious from your perspective, how does implementing self-care, you know, help our marriages in the long run?
I mean, typically when we start to rebalance the nervous system and reset it, we tend to be more patient. So we are less triggered. It's easier for us to handle what comes our way. And as a result, we're more enjoyable to be around. And so I've only ever seen it positively impact the marriage because it makes whatever spouse is engaging in the self-care tends to be just easier to be around. And that impacts like the whole family unit. The other great thing about self-care and some of these practices is that they can be used as a family or with a family. So I work with a lot of parents on incorporating mindfulness into bedtime routines and things like that. Using helping your child sleep well or the bedtime routine, like I said, to increase mindful behavior. So having the parents sit and do some breathing exercises with the kids the last 2 minutes before bed. And then they each go around and tell each other two things they're proud of themselves for doing that day and two things they're proud of the other for doing as well, and have the kids do it back and forth. And you can have the parents do it as well. So I always encourage that, especially if you have little ones. It's a great bonding activity. It's really nice to kind of sync up and to end your day in a way that feels good. And it really only takes up to 5 minutes to do it. So I would say it positively impacts the marriage and the family. And it's always a bonus if everybody's willing to participate in it.
Yeah, I like that. My little guy is not talking yet, but I'd imagine if I at least modeled it for him, that maybe he would start to pick that up down the road.
For sure. And so I even have parents do it with infants because energetically, the child, especially before, you know, their verbal skills are developed, is really focused and cued into your energy, right? And so if you're sitting there and you're really focused on the things you love about them and that you're proud of them for, all they're going to be doing is soaking up all that great energy and all the visual cues and all the verbal cues and all that stuff. So start early, start when they're in the womb. It's just the practice of choosing each day to focus and really step into that energy of like love and gratitude and appreciation.
We do that even with like my son doesn't, well, he has some words now, but when he was entirely nonverbal, we still did affirmations with him every night. And I knew, you know, he wasn't going to repeat back everything I said. But now that he does have some words, I like that we've continued to do that with him.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's a great practice. And he could definitely, I don't know, sometimes I'm convinced even when they're too young to speak or they haven't, for whatever reason, developed their verbal skills yet, it's almost... I'm not going to say more impactful, but almost because it's really about the emotion and really about the energy. And it's not, less about waiting to hear them repeat it or what they're going to say. It's just really about that emotional connection. So
yeah, I would have to agree.
Yeah. They definitely just soak it up. I know. So when Sarah, Steffi and I got together, I totally embarrassed myself when we climbed to the top of this mountain and I started singing a song for Tristan because we were FaceTiming, but that was like my affirmation song that I sing for him. And I'm going to spare everybody my horrible voice. I'm not singing it right now, but it's just an affirmation song that I always like sung to him in the mornings. And now he sings it to Ezra and he is like his face, his whole body lights up and he believes every little word. And that to me is like so special. But I started before he was verbal. So he was just taking in my excitement about it. And I feel like he connected my excitement with the words, you are smart, you are brave, you are strong, you are kind, you are loving. And now he, well, he's pretty spicy, but he can show those emotions and he does understand it now. So I think that for us was really helpful too.
So my question for you with the breathing, did you mention a resource where we can kind of learn some of those breathing techniques?
Yes. So you can come to all my classes.
We will put a link in our podcast notes for everybody.
I usually have people, there's like some, like a core group of fundamental breathing techniques that are really great. And they're really, really simple. So a great breathing technique for kids and for adults is called square breath. I don't know if anybody's heard of square breath.
No.
You can Google it as well. And essentially what you're doing is inhaling for a count of say four, inhale for a count of four, hold for a count of four, exhale four, hold four. And so you imagine tracing a square, like with kids, you can do it. Inhale for four, hold four, exhale four, and back up. And so the square breath is great. So if someone's learning how to do breath work, I would start there. It's really soothing, really grounding. Another one is just, it's super simple, a full body breath where you're inhaling for a count shorter than you're exhaling. So you're inhaling for a count of five, exhaling for a count of six. And that really starts to ground and calm the nervous system. So lengthening your exhales. And that's kind of where I would start fundamentally, because there's a lot of different kinds of breath work. A lot of them are great for adults to boost energy and then to also calm and ground down. But I would start with square breath and full body breath. Essentially for kids too, you want to make sure, and for adults, that you're able to have, like, you know, diaphragmatic breathing, which means you're able to start breathing through your whole body. So you'll notice when a baby sleeps, their belly and their spine moves like a wave. They're able to fill up into the belly and up into the chest and lungs and kind of exhale back down. A lot of adults who are stressed out and anxious tend to only breathe in their chest, very shallow breath. And that predisposes us to anxiety, because when we start to get triggered, our breath's already short because we're only breathing into our chest, and then we feel short of breath, and then we start to have other symptoms. So filling up your belly, learning how to breathe into the belly, just into the belly, inhale, exhale out of the belly, inhale, exhale out of the chest, inhale, exhale out of the shoulders, head, neck, and shoulders. So really learning and concentrating breath in each zone of your body so that you're able to actually fully breathe is a great way to decrease stress and anxiety too, because most people don't know how to breathe properly.
I'm over here taking deep breaths now, like getting relaxed.
I do that several times throughout the day because I feel like I'm going to lose my ever loving mind so much. I'm like, I just need to take a breath. And that now Tristan will try to breathe with me. And it's almost like patronizing that he like does it with you. Like, he puts his hands out and everything. I'm like, okay, don't make fun of me. I'm really trying to keep it together here, kid. So on that note, what would be some advice you would give or some words of wisdom for the moms that deal with mom guilt when they choose to do anything for themselves? I know some moms have no problem doing it. And then other moms just really struggle with trying to do anything for themselves.
Yeah. So this question can be tricky to answer because psychologically, if we have resistance to putting ourselves first or making ourselves a priority, it typically comes from conditioning. So we're conditioned to behave in a certain way. And so if we were taught that it's selfish to prioritize our needs, that's our conditioning, and then we act it out. So subconscious change and integration is something that I work with people on a lot with Psych-K, and that's really, really helpful for that. If you just want something to kind of jump off with, it would be about just starting to talk out loud about how you can't fill another's cup until yours is full. Just understanding that. And even if there is resistance, asking for support on that. So asking your partner or whoever your support system is, hey, I recognize this is important and I fight myself on it. And I can figure that piece out later, but I need 10 to 15 minutes a day to do this because I am burning the candle at both ends, and recognize that if I hit a wall, everything's going to kind of fall apart. So it's just sort of succumbing to the idea that We're not superhuman and that our resources only go so far, and then it's important to replenish them. The great thing about practicing, you know, active self-care that calms the nervous system is that it's going to allow you to become more calm, which is going to allow you to more easily accept taking breaks and more easily accept building in time for yourself. So when we're kind of spun out or tightly wound because we're stressed and we're anxious, it's going to be even harder again to see things in a new way because we don't have that blood flow. So I would suggest getting support and making sure that you have accountability there so that you're kind of forced to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then utilizing that time so that you start to get your blood flow back to your brain and you're able to, at that point, willingly choose to take the time.
We always joke in my house. I mean, obviously, it's important for the men to be happy as well, but we always say, happy wife, happy life. But like I remind myself, if I do start to have that mom guilt for doing something, I honestly just give myself a pep talk. Like, I'm a happier person and handle situations with more grace and patience and ease if I know that I've taken a minute or two for myself. So we always say, like, my husband and I will switch off and, you know, we make sure that he has his time, whether it's going to fish one afternoon or, you know, whatever gives him time to himself and me take time for myself. And then, you know, it's so important to take time together without the kids. So we just make sure we just cover all the bases because, I mean, you're right. You said it. If, you know, mom's happy and dad's happy, it just tends to be a happier household.
Yeah. And when it comes to guilt, you know, guilt's an emotion, but it's a byproduct of a story we tell ourselves. So it's always good to catch the story. So it's like, what story am I making up about prioritizing myself? And mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh, I'm feeling guilty, it's like the guilt is spurned from a thought, and the thought might be, you know, I can't believe you're taking time to do this because of blah, 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 or this is what will happen if you take time for yourself. And so always questioning your narratives is important too. And just asking, like, well, is this story I'm telling myself absolutely true? Is it 100% true? Can I be absolutely certain 100% of the time that this scary story is true? And the answer is always no. And then it's like, well, how do I react, respond, and behave when I believe this is true? When I believe it's selfish to take care of myself? What happens? What are the consequences for choosing this thought? And those are never great consequences. And so that helps people start to take accountability for the fact that if we believe or we're telling ourselves that self-care is selfish, mm-hmm. what is going to be the end outcome of that story? And is that the story we really want? And then furthermore, for parents, it's understanding that those stories or those feelings of guilt are also what you're going to be subconsciously downloading onto your child. By proxy. Mm-hmm. So it's important to take account of our narratives and the stories. And so even if we're struggling a little bit to initiate that self-care and we give into guilt, just know that if guilt is habitual and you're giving into that, it's also going to become your child's normal as well.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
That's really powerful because I grew up with a single mom, and so she did everything and she still does. And she did prioritize, you know, doing things for herself. And so I didn't have as much of a problem speaking up, but I feel like sometimes when you're in the middle of those tough medical seasons, like when Tristan was really little and we just had all these health challenges his first year, I had a really tough time getting outside of my head to actually even do it. But once I did it, I didn't feel guilty. It was just physically moving myself from the situation, which I know if you're in the NICU or you're having a really long hospital stay, it's really hard to remove yourself from that situation. And so I found it helpful when Katie did a class in person or the virtual class. That's what I did. The in-person class, physically packing a bag and going somewhere else just for an hour. And that's what I needed in that season. And I tell her this all the time. It got me through that really tough season because I was able to get outside of myself and confront some of the trauma, the birth trauma that we had with Tristan, and really move forward with everything. I can attest to telling yourself a different story is really beneficial for your kid.
I think too, for me, mom guilt is something that I struggle with big time. And I think that it has stemmed from Joshua's diagnosis, because I can't really think back to any times necessarily where I've learned it growing up or like from my mom, but I do think that it stemmed from Joshua's diagnosis and feeling like he has so many things that he needs, from his like dietary stuff to his schedule to having to be on top of all the things that he does, you know, just all these different things that I put it in my head that like, I'm the only one who can take care of him. Like mm-hmm. I have to be there. Like my husband's not going to do it the same way as I do, even though he does a fantastic job. You know, it is things that I've put in my head, but I think that it's really stemmed from that diagnosis and having some of these extra needs that I've put it on myself, where I feel like I've told myself like I'm the only one who can take care of him, which isn't necessarily true. I might do it the best, but it's not necessarily true.
Mama always does it best. Yeah, you know? That's true. Mama always does it best, but in the hour or 15 minutes or 10 minutes that you're doing something for yourself, the world may not fall apart. There may be bumps totally. And bruises. Somebody may not get fed. And I'm not saying this, but Jordan would do this. This might be some of my personal experience. You know, things might go a little crazy, but when you come back, you can, it's so worth it to do it. I will shout self-care from the rooftops.
Me too.
For sure.
Okay, Katie. So I know we kind of covered this, but overall, what would you say would be your top tips then for self-care? What would you say is the most important out of some of the things that we've talked about?
The most important tip for self-care, I think would be, I would say for moms, the most important tip for self-care is to get it in where you can fit it in and double up. So we talked a little bit earlier about like taking a bath. While you're in the bath, do the breathing while you're listening to a meditation.
Okay.
Boom, boom, boom. Ooh,
that's like the triple threat.
Right.
You know,
knock do some yoga out. In there.
Yeah. So do 10 minutes of stretching beforehand. You take a 15 minute bath. You're listening to the meditation. You're done. You're going to sleep, you know, like a baby, so to speak. That's what I recommend. Get it in where you can fit it in. Be gentle with yourselves. Don't be like, I have to wake up at 6 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning and do blank, blank, blank. No, you don't. The idea is, if the idea of stress or self-care stresses you out, it's being counterproductive. Right. So get it in where you can fit it in, ask for help and support and taking that time for yourself. And then double up where you can. So if you're, say you drop your kids off at school or something, or you have a break in your day, whenever that is, and maybe you get 30 minutes, doubling up again. So finding a yin yoga, while you're doing yin yoga, you're also practicing breath work, mindfulness, and meditation. So you're knocking them out. It'll make you feel really, really good. So that would be my number one tip for moms, is to familiarize yourself kind of with those things. So it's, think of self-care too as mind, body, spirit. So movement with like yoga, walking in the grass, things like that. Spirit with like meditation, breath work, those types of things. And then the mind would be mindfulness. So mantras and staying focused and present. So there's ways to incorporate all those into whatever you're doing. You could take a walk with your kids, a mindful walk, leave your phone behind, or whatever distraction would be there. Everybody's focused on the same intention for the walk. Everybody has to come up with whatever it is. So you can, again, incorporate it where you can. But there's always a way to do it. It's just starting to get familiar and practicing with it. But I would say making time for it, asking for support, and creating that time and space, and doubling up or tripling up your effort while you're in it.
Okay, those are great. I love that you said to be gentle with yourself. I think that's such an important reminder for all of us.
Yeah, it's not a race. It's really just about learning to care for yourself in a way that's going to help you leverage and optimize your human experience and your experience as a mother, and a friend, human, sister, mm-hmm. family member, all that stuff. So, you know, we have to put in, it's a practice. We have to put in time to practicing getting good at being the best versions of ourselves. And part of that is just learning to care for our internal navigation system.
And I did hear you mention sleep, which we're going to chat about a little bit on the next episode. But we're going to leave it at a cliffhanger for now. But we do have one question that someone sent in on our Q&A question sticker. So I wanted to be able to ask that really quick. And it says, I never remember to take care of myself, and I have no family who can watch the kids for me. What are your tips? So you kind of answered that a little bit. You could do a walk with them, but I do feel like it's still important to have self-care away from the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, so many parts to that question. It depends on how old the kids are. You know, if they're infants and you're with them all the time, then it would look a little bit different. But then that would probably insinuate that there's a nap time there. So part of that could tie into sleep. So if your kids are really little, but they're not sleeping well and you're holding them all day, starting to work on independent sleep might be important so that you can have a little bit of a break. But I think if whoever wrote that could shift into the understanding that you only need 10 to 15 minutes a day, and it's things that you can incorporate into like a bath time. So hopefully the person in question has time to at least shower sometimes or bathe, and you could do it then, you know? And so it's get it in where you can fit it in. And it might be that time. If the kids are in school, you can even take 10 minutes in the car and do breath work. So getting creative about it. But I think the first step for that is just knowing you only need 10 to 15 minutes. Put a sticky note out on your dashboard, set an alarm on your phone, take steps so that you remember first, if that's the issue. And then knowing that it's not a lengthy activity so much as it's just getting habituated to the practice.
Got it. Good advice.
Don't forget that there are so many ways that you can help support the Tulips team. We'll be launching our first ever Brain Rep program, which will give you a chance to purchase merch at a discounted price while we help spread the word about our podcast and what we're doing here. Merchandise is available on our website, and we just added some new styles, so be sure to check them out. You can also become an official patron by becoming a monthly subscriber. As always, thank you guys for joining, and we hope you stay tuned for the next episode.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, everybody.